I'm Tamara Steele. In this week's show, a very controversial decision from the Higgs government is reversed days after it was made, how plastic bags can help the homeless, and we get the lowdown on this summer theater festival. Hundreds rallied outside the Sussex Health Centre on Family Day to show their support for the facility. Sussex was one of six New Brunswick communities which would have seen their emergency rooms close between midnight and 8 a.m. beginning March 11th. But after days of backlash following the announcement, Premier Blaine Higgs announced he would cancel the changes until consultations could be done. Paul Sambi's Brad Perry spoke with Sussex Mayor Mark Thorne at the rally.
What was your reaction yesterday when you got the news that Horizon and the province would be not going ahead with these proposed changes?
Well, the Premier called me last night and told me that he was suspending the reforms for a period of about 8 months, that conversations will start to take place this spring with all stakeholders, doctors, nurses, and communities, to ensure that when reforms do go ahead, that they've only been done after everyone has been consulted. So I'm relieved to hear that, but this is far from over. And I think that citizens need to be engaged, remain engaged throughout the whole process to make sure that everyone in New Brunswick has access to health care at the time and place where it's needed.
So, of course, today's rally was organized before the changes were announced last night, the cancellation of the proposed changes. So is today's rally going to be, what is going to be the idea behind today's rally?
The continuation of this rally is as important today as it was on Friday when the mayors across the province organized it. We're grateful that Mr. Higgs has suspended it, but nevertheless, people need an opportunity to come together to visibly show the CEO of Horizon and Vitality and our elected leaders that this is an issue that is one of the most important that we face as New Brunswickers. And so we had to go ahead. We would not stop this.
And is there still a concern that, you know, we could still see the air closures here after, you know, we go through all these consultations and those kinds of things?
Of course that concern is there. The approach taken by the health authorities and by government was scorched earth. And that creates a lot of fear, and that fear doesn't go away quickly. So, yes, those fears, until we see the reforms later on in 2020, that fear will remain.
Sussex Fundy St. Martin's MLA Bruce Northrup was one of two progressive conservative MLAs to speak publicly against the reforms.
Today is a hell of a lot better today than the last 4 or 5 days. I think when the Premier, or actually I know when the Premier and Health Minister received a lot of the information that the mayors and community leaders and myself were able to deliver to the Premier and the Minister of Health and other people on Friday, that they, as Stephen said, they get sold by a snake oil salesperson. But I have faith in the Premier. I have faith in the Minister of Health, and I just had a gut feeling, and you get a gut feeling every once in a while when you're an MLA or a councillor or a mayor. You get that gut feeling that something was going to happen at the end of the day, and that happened last night. So I'm honored to work with people. I've learned a lot about the health system from the doctors that are behind me, and the information that they gave me was just unbelievable. And that happened on Tuesday. Wednesday, I talked to Horizon for the whole day, and obviously Thursday morning at 10 o'clock, you got what my stance is on this situation. We need the Sussex Health Center. We have to have the Sussex Health Center in full operation, and we need our lab. We need our X-ray department. And most of all, we need our emergency room, and I'll do everything I can to make sure that happens. Thank you.
MLA Robert Govan also spoke out against the reforms. The former deputy premier went so far as to quit the Higgs government over the changes.
To be honest, when I drove here, I didn't know what I was going to say. I really didn't know. Because those facts, and I'm going to be truthful, and I want to meet Evan. I spoke to a young guy who... Evan McLaughlin, are you here, Evan? I don't know if you can hear me or not. All right. You asked me, please, Mr. Govan, don't let us down. Well, I didn't. But this is not about me. The only thing that ticks me off a little bit, I went on the air on TV almost 2 weeks ago to give those facts. And that's why I don't like politics, and that's why I don't know where I'm going with this. If you have to flip-flop like that and play with people's lives like that to do politics, I don't want to do anything with any politician. Because I would have loved to know before I had to quit my job. Nonetheless, the important thing is you're staying open. And I'm going to push people to do the right thing, because something my father said, I met some people here. I know no lady can remember my father because I don't see a lady here over 39 years old. But my dad was a minister during the Hatfield years. We're a long way from that, let me tell you. He was a minister during the Hatfield years, and he did what was the right thing. You put the people before the party.
Several current and former physicians of the Sussex Health Center also spoke at the rally, including Dr. Steve Allaby.
This battle's not over. And, it's been frustrating. And, we're talking a lot about statistics, and Dave McMillan's going to come a little bit and talk about statistics, and because it's important in our decisions. But for me, it was your faces. I was seeing these people that needed care in the middle of the night and that weren't going to get it. And it was hard. As Mark had stated, it was really, really affecting me. I wasn't eating, my appetite was gone, and I was upset. I was fearful for you, and fearful that this decision was being made for all the wrong reasons, with no actual good outcomes, but lots of risks for no good reason. And we do need to find solutions for healthcare that is in crisis. We do have a huge nursing shortage, and the way to solve that is not to displace nurses from areas, one area to another. We need to find a solution to our nursing crisis, but this isn't it. And I too would just like to, because I work with these ladies and men every day, the nurses that were told that they were fired or going to be displaced and out of this community. People just bought houses, had been thinking about moving their family, and then to be told a few days later, no, you got 6 more months, maybe. So we still need to be fighting for our community.
Premier Higgs says government will now hold a series of consultations in the affected communities in April and May, as well as a healthcare summit in June. The findings from those meetings and the summit are expected to be released this fall. A recent decision by the Fundy Regional Service Commission to stop recycling plastic bags isn't going over well. When a dirty plastic bag goes into a load, it contaminates the rest of the items and requires a worker to separate them and clean them. It's a time-consuming and costly process, which is leading to some innovative ideas for dealing with the no longer accepted plastic bags. Pulse MB's Stephanie Sirois spoke to Renee Outhouse, the owner of Buyer's Boutique, who is collecting plastic bags to crochet into mats for the homeless.
The idea behind the mats was really just, I was looking for something to do that I could give back to the community. I really didn't have any kind of idea as to what I wanted to do. And then one night when I was just scrolling through Facebook, I had come across a video of a group of women who had done mats like this in the States. And I thought it was a fantastic idea, and it, to help keep, individuals warm. So I said, well, that's worth a try. So I rounded up whatever bags I had in the house at the time and just started playing around with it to get the feel of how to crochet the mats. And it turned out that I could, in fact, do it after a little bit of practice. So then I realized I needed bags because I use reusable as much as possible, so we only had a few kind of left at the house. So I utilized my business page to reach out to my loyal customers and ask them to bring in bags when they came in to visit the store next. And I was offering a 15% discount. And then it blew up. So now it's turning into something that hopefully I'll get donations for and build up a surplus and do the mats for every winter.
So how are you planning on getting these mats out?
So once I have them made, first step is, of course, to get donations. We haven't gotten too many yet, so I'm hoping that they'll start coming in. But once we get the donations, start making the mats. The idea is that depending on how many we have, we're going to go to the shelters in St. John, and I will be handing out, trying to disperse them evenly so that if they have to turn people away, then they can provide them with one of these mats. In addition, if we have some left, I will also be just going around the uptown area with my husband or maybe even a group if that's of interest, and then handing them out myself to the individuals that we find.
Are you concerned about what might happen to these mats after they've been worn out?
Well, I mean, it's just like anything. Things do wear out. I'm hoping that by that point, because they're pretty sturdy, they'll last quite a while. I'm hoping by that point we have a solution for recycling plastic bags. But if we don't, I do not have quite a plan in place for that. I just wanted to keep them out of the landfill as much as possible.
And do you have a mat completed already, or?
I have a mat almost completed. I've got about 4 feet done of the first mat, but I've run out of bags. So we really need to have donations come in so that I can finish it up and get started on some more.
How long does it take you roughly to make a mat?
Well, if I'm doing everything start to finish, it's going to take at least 2 to 3 hours. To get a mat completed, at least, and that's guessing because I've only been able to do it sporadically here and there. But by the time I get the bags, flatten them out, fold them over, get them cut into strips, attach the strips to form the strand, and then start crocheting, it does take some time.
I've got to ask now, do you ever get tired of crocheting?
Yes, I definitely do. I do. I enjoy it, so that's not a problem there, but my hands do get quite sore because crocheting with plastic is very different from crocheting with yarn, and it does tend to be a little bit more difficult to maneuver. Some of the plastic bags that I've received are very thick plastic, so that, again, makes it a little bit more difficult.
I was just about to ask. I mean, I've seen a crochet hook myself, and I haven't received the gumption yet to try my hand at crocheting, but they're quite different from yarn needles.
It is, yes. I don't knit, so I have never used yarn needles, but crochet hooks, I was able to kind of get the handle of that for my business where I crochet the face cloths and my scrubbies and my soap sacks and things like that.
So this decision was basically started by Fundy Regional Service Commission no longer accepting plastic bags. Can you tell me how you feel about that?
I don't like it, obviously. I mean, that's why I'm trying to come up with ways to reuse the bags. But the big problem that we're having is that when people turn in recycling, not everybody rinses things out and puts in clean, recyclable items, which then soils the whole lot. So, for example, if you were to put in a can of Alphagetti, let's just say, you didn't rinse out the can, you just put the can in the recycling, then the leftover remnants will get all over the bags, then soil the bags. So what's happening is they have to wash the plastic and then sort it out and then find out what can be recycled and what can't be recycled. And it's just it's too much of a process because not everybody's being consistent. So as horrible as it is, I can see why they've come to the decision.
That sums up all of the questions that I have for you. Is there anything else you'd like to say about this?
I do want to mention, if anybody is looking to make donations, we are accepting them at the store here in Rossay. The address is 2 Parkdale Avenue in Rossay. It's right off of Hantam Road, so it's right on the main drag. You can bring them in during regular business hours, or you can even reach out to our Facebook page and let us know where they could be picked up if you're being a drop-off point. And if you are making donations, we do request that the bags be clean, kind of stuffed all into one so that they're a little bit more organized.
I'm Stephanie Sirwa.
Submissions for this year's Fundy Fringe Festival are now open. The 8th annual Summer Theater Festival draws local, national, and international artists together for 5 days of creativity. The festival runs August 18th to the 22nd and brings the fringes of the art world to the forefront with theater, dance, film, music, and more. Pulse NB's Danielle McCready asked Festival Director Sarah Rankin what it takes to make it into the festival.
The best thing about Fringe is that it doesn't matter if it's a good submission or not, because everything is lottery-based. So you could apply with every single detail, best laid-out plans, and you could also apply with really nothing. We've gotten applications before that were strictly kind of TBA, you know, and artists have told me that they want to be involved, but they have nothing planned out, and that's totally fine. You can just put your name in that hat, put TBA in the field, and you have just as great a chance as the person who did all the planning.
So I guess what's the process? Do they just email you their pitch? Is there an online form, or how does that all work?
There is an online form. They can go to our website, fundyfringefestival.com, and the form is right there to apply. We look for the basic information about sort of the genre of the show, how long it might be, any special tech requirements that they're going to need, because that will determine what venue we might put them in, if they have any accessibility needs. We also ask if they are an equity-seeking artist, which for us means that they are an artist who identifies as either a person with disability, as an LGBTQIA2 spirit plus, or as a black or indigenous or a person of color. Just because for our lottery, we do try to ensure that we're meeting accessibility in all senses. So we do reserve a spot locally in our lottery of the 10 that we select locally and of the 8 that we select nationally. We do reserve one spot for an artist that identifies as an equity-seeking artist, because it's very difficult, I find, in Canada with how colonial our theaters tend to be. And so if there's one way that we can start to break down some of those barriers, it's by holding ground for those that have been excluded up to this point.
So is there any sort of theme decided for this year at all? Any sort of direction you guys want to go or anything like that? Or is it just kind of the typical Fringe values?
Well, the theme and the feel of the festival every single year is pretty much exclusively determined by who comes out of that lottery. The artists really set the vibe and the feel for that year, which is fantastic because it really is grassroots. It really is the artists manifesting the festival for themselves rather than being dictated what they can and can't do, which is not something that we want to do or can do.
Mm-hmm. So the festival is in August?
Yep, August 17th till the 22nd. The 17th is going to be our preview night, which is always a big to-do. All of our artists get up and do a little clip from their show, and the place is usually filled to the brim. And then the rest of the 5 days are filled with shows. Our artists get to perform once a day, if they wish, and take back all their ticket sales, which is fantastic.
So is there anything new this year happening at all? Anything you guys are trying different, or is it just a good old, same old classic Fringe?
Well, last year we had our first ever Kids Fringe, which was an afternoon on the Saturday at the Interaction School of Performing Arts, and we had a great time with that. We had a lot of workshops for kids, and we had a show for kids, and it was such a huge success, especially the show, that we thought, okay, there's got to be a way we can keep growing this. And so we would love to keep growing our family content, simply because Fringe in the past has gotten this image in people's heads, I guess, that because it's lottery and because there's no censorship and because we're non-juried, that anything can happen. And it truly is, anything can happen. We have had shows with nudity. We have had shows that dealt with very controversial subjects before. We have had burlesque shows, you name it. We've had it. And so people have this idea that that's what Fringe is. But Fringe really is anything. And so we want to make sure that even families with small children or people that may not enjoy the more controversial or the more challenging content, so to speak, have something that they can participate in as well. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, we're not going to be around forever. We have to make sure that the kids are learning to grow up with a creative spirit and an innovative spirit, and that's a big piece of it too. It's encouraging that mindset.
Mm-hmm. So when are, I guess, are submissions open now?
They are. They're open until March the 6th.
Okay, awesome. Is there anything you wanted to add, maybe?
Everybody is welcome. It doesn't matter your experience level. It doesn't matter if it's your first time ever doing a show. It doesn't matter if it's your 100th time doing a show. It doesn't matter what background you come from artistically. It doesn't matter your own personal experiences with theater. Just get out and participate and try something new. We've had people apply to us and have great runs that have been touring their shows across the country, and then we've had local artists and newbie artists coming to us who have never even set foot on the stage, have never written anything before like that, and also have incredible success. I think those ones tend to be the bigger successes as well because people are excited about the homegrown talent. They're excited about the person that has never tried it before, just to see what they do. What they've thrown at the wall.
So for maybe people who've been trying to, you know, they've been pitching, they've been submitting every year, is there any sort of, you know, magic to how many times you submit or anything like that? Or is it really all just random?
It really is just that random. I've had people apply 4 or 5 years in a row and just never got in, and then finally it happened. It is literally the luck of the draw when it comes to festivals, because that's what we're doing. We're drawing the names out of a hat, and there is no magic trick. There is no, you know, best laid plans of mice and men. It's simply try it, and it's low risk. It's $25 to apply. If you get in, great. If you don't, you're out $25, which for some people, you know, isn't too bad. For others, it might be, and I understand that. But hopefully that risk will pay off for them.
I'm Danielle McCready.
That's it for this week's show. I'm Tamara Steele.